Mormon Stories is a production of the Open Stories Foundation and relies solely upon the support of people like you, its listeners. To help keep the podcast alive or to become a member of the community, please become a monthly subscriber by visiting mormonstories.org and clicking on the donate button on the right side of the page under support. All contributions to Mormon Stories are completely tax deductible and go towards producing the podcast and building communities and programs of support for Mormons like you. Thanks for your support.
Circling gloom, lead thou me on. The night is dark and I am far from home. Lead thou.
Jake, I don't think we need to dwell on which particular issue got you, you know, sure. Really, but can you just sort of give us the narrative that you guys moved and.
Yeah. So with Meg and I, by the end of the summer, we were pretty much on the same page as far as our feelings towards the church, as far as whether or not we... I mean, there's two things. It's whether or not we were going to go, and then it kind of became whether or not we believed.
Right.
You know, and I think ultimately around... I mean, we came to the same conclusion probably around September, October last year, where both of us, I think we were completely together in everything.
Yeah.
We took a little bit of a different path to get there, mm-hmm. and a different pace. But for me too, the gay issue was, it may have been enough reason for me to leave the church, but it wasn't enough reason for me to not believe it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's the distinction that I should make. So by the end of the summer, we were together and we decided to move to Arizona because we knew we had kind of an already built-in support group out there that we had kind of been cultivating over the summer.
Yeah.
And so it kind of became a logical place. We ended up in Arizona. We'd lived there before, so we had friends, support, and I got a job. So that was kind of an easy transition, and so then we just kind of settled in Arizona. And like the first week we were there, I think we looked at each other and we were like, "Are we going to church?" And I think we said, "Nope," and that was kind of it. Over the months, I had kind of debated. This is how I think. I'm thinking, what if there's a 14-year-old kid there who's gay, who's feeling suicidal and needs that person to support? And that was like the only reason I could think of why I wanted to go to church. But I didn't know if that existed or not, you know, and it wasn't enough for me to kind of open up to bring this kind of unhealthy thing back into our lives.
We have a child to protect.
You know? It was like, I didn't want to throw John. And I wasn't saying I want to bring John to church, but I didn't know if I just wanted to bring that. We'd kind of just walked away from it, you know? And I felt like I needed to get on my... We need to kind of get on our own 2 feet, on our own 4 feet, I guess, you know, and make sure our family, we know where we are before we really try to go out and do something like that.
And I hear that about wanting to stay to help others. And I really... I've been well known to encourage fence sitters to stay, if for nothing else, to help the LGBT
people. Everybody was telling us to do that.
And
we need you to stay. We need you to stay.
And I do encourage a lot of people to stay, but I think I can only encourage the fence sitters to stay. I can't really encourage someone who is really, truly no longer getting at least something there. I can't encourage those people to stay or who feel like there's harm being done to them by staying. So I really hope more people will stay. I hope that becomes possible for more people if the church culture changes, even if no doctrine changes.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't say it's right for everybody, and I don't.
Yeah.
Even on that front, even if it's only for the sake of others, every person who can be there, it's a help. But mm-hmm. I also realize that people have to choose where they're going to fight their battles. But you guys have gone on to fight battles for the LGBT community since then. I mean, maybe you can talk a little bit about, you know, what you're doing, what you've been doing. I mean, you've even been involved in the Mormon LGBT activism from your place. And I realize that you've been doing this while you've also been going through your own transition sort of out of the church, which can be kind of awkward. And it's also awkward for me. I'm someone who's well known to be outside of the church, but I'm fighting an issue. I'm actually sort of fighting side by side with active Mormons who they are in the church, and it's their church really to change and it's mine just to help out how I can, right? I mean, it's not my church now. I mean, I was raised there. It's my heritage. But so maybe you guys could speak to how this evolution has happened for you, both in your lives and in your activism, because you have remained a strong LGBT activist.
Mm-hmm. Should I start with that and then?
Sure. I guess I started in activism within the LDS community for LGBT people, just because it's my language and I understand. I can understand. I can really know what that, why they feel so devastated, what the doctrine does to them, or you know, what they must be going through, losing your baptismal covenants, your eternal family, all of those things. So, I feel like I could have a good conversation with that. So we got involved in affirmation, Gay Mormon Stories, No More Strangers, All Arizona. We just jumped into all these groups and
yeah.
We blogged and we did events. We went, marched in Pride. I did a fundraiser last year for Affirmation too. And we could choose a facility or choose a something in our community, some people to help in our community. So we looked in our All Arizona group and Affirmation group. We looked into 1 in 10. It's they have halfway houses for homeless LGBT kids, and they give them meals a day and do character building skills and just kind of provide mentorship. They also have their own high school, so they're in need of stuff. And so we our LDS community got together and we did a fundraiser, the supporting something that is an LDS based, but it's in our community. So we did that. This year we again with Affirmation, we're going to be doing a fundraiser for another facility for halfway houses for gay boys called Mulligan's Manor. Uh-huh. And they are desperate for materials and clothes and shoes. You can imagine how fast they go through shoes. So we provide bedding, shoes, clothing, socks, just the basics. And the most wanted items are socks. That's the thing. I can imagine if you don't have a home or a couch to sit on all day, you wear through your socks pretty fast.
Yeah.
So yeah, we stay really active in our LDS community. When people ask me, are you still active? I say, of course, I'm totally active in the Mormon church. I mean, I don't go to church on Sunday and my faith has wavered. I don't have a belief system in the faith, but I'm so active with my Mormon people.
Right.
So to me, it feels like I'm the most active I've ever been.
Because you're involved in a LDS, LGBT mm-hmm. activism, and this is still a Mormon cause, even mm-hmm. though...
It's not a Mormon-sponsored thing.
It's certainly not Mormon-sponsored, but mm-hmm. you're devoting as much of your life to that as you were ever devoting to the church.
And you're representing yourself as Mormons. I mean, you've got 15 Mormons bringing clothes and supplies to this halfway yeah. house. Mm-hmm. You know, and they always want to know, well, who are you with? You know, like, I mean, what do you say? We're an unorthodox, non-believing Mormon. And what do you say? You know, we're Mormons.
I do still feel Mormon. And like you said, it's your heritage. It's yeah. what you were raised yeah. with. And it was just a year ago, like a little over a year ago, that I was active participating. So I don't know if I'll ever get to a point where I can separate the Mormon and the Meg. I don't know. But I still feel like they're all intertwined. Just this, just little things that you just grow up with. You can't.
Yeah.
I'm sure maybe they will unwind themselves eventually. Maybe. I don't know. But, if somebody asks me if I'm Mormon, I'll say that I'm Mormon, but that I'm not practicing.
Yeah.
Mormon. So you kind of lose your culture and your community and all of that. I wish there was more space for non-believing Mormons. Because it is your people, it's your culture, it's your neighbors, it's your friends, and maybe that we could have like a discussion in the church building about still maintaining your community and your yeah. friendships, but have like teach more honest history. Just be a little more open and honest about historical transparency.
Uh-huh. Well, even just the way the Mormon community is set up socially, mm-hmm. it creates a way of excluding anyone who's not fully active.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have to be that way.
It doesn't.
They could create a space and social life and a structure that it was inclusive of, mm-hmm. of former believers, and I think it'd be wonderful if we could all feel as if we're part of this community, this Mormon community. It's not that way now. Certainly, we certainly feel like, you know, when we're not an active member, you sort of there's us and them, and anyone who's even a little bit inactive is already a them. That's kind of this sad reality with how it's the Mormon society works, but.
And it, as a whole, I mean, of course, you have some really super awesome wards and out in
and exceptions to that.
San Francisco, yeah, there's always exceptions to that. And everybody would probably like to believe that they are the most accepting ward ever. But, I mean, it, as an outsider now, it's really kind of hard. It's really sad to go through that. And I feel like I'm still the same person. I'm still Meg. I still have all the same hopes and dreams. I still love to hold babies and hug trees, you know, or I feel like once my whole being and whole life was so wrapped up into the church, it was all encompassing. So when that was taken for me, and I don't feel like I walked away, I felt like it was a death. It was something that I had to mourn, and it was taken for me. And so I kind of had to do like a body check. Like I almost physically checked. I was like, okay. It's, you feel like jarred, and then you're like, okay, I still love to read books. I still, you know, you have to kind of go through and see what, who you still are. It feels like an identity crisis almost.
Yeah.
But I'm pleasantly surprised to know that I'm still me, and I'm still a good person, and I still have high morals, and I want good things for people. I just want to make the world better. And do my little part. But yeah, we are actively involved in LGBT rights and activism, especially like politically in Arizona. I was very involved in fighting against SB 1062.
Where they're trying to make it a protected right to discriminate against gay people, basically, was what they were trying to do, yeah.
Yeah, and I took John down to the courthouse that day when they were voting on it, because I thought, if I had a chance to speak, I'm going to speak. And I wanted John to see that people will fight for his rights. Because, I mean, essentially what it was saying is you could put a sign in your door saying it's against my religious beliefs to serve gay people. So no gays allowed was just a vision in my head. And I just thought, you're going to see that it's 2014 and this law is not going to pass. And you're going to see that, and we're going to focus on the positive things in this world, and that people were evolving and were changing. So I was expecting to have this very positive experience down at the courthouse, and it passed. And I was shocked. And I was just sitting there shocked. And I just looked at my son and I said, I am so sorry. I'm so sorry. And he said, what does this mean? Like, I can't like go into a store if they don't serve gay people. And what does that mean, Mom? And you know, obviously it's easier to hide if you're gay or not. You know, you can go into a store. You don't have to disclose that information.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not marked.
You could be evicted from your home.
You could lose your job. There were
medical professionals can refuse to treat you.
Mm-hmm. Like I have an equality sticker on the back of my car. If I was in a car accident, they would be well within the law to not treat me, whether they knew.
Unfortunately, the law ended up getting vetoed by.
Yes, the law was vetoed, but at that moment, I had to like look at my child and say, "I'm so sorry. I was shocked," and he was like. He was shocked. He'd never been faced with anything like that before. And anybody that's faced with discrimination will say it doesn't feel good. And I can't speak to that, you know, but it was terrible.
Sort of a jolt to him and a rude awakening to what the discrimination a lot of gays have faced.
It was really the first time that he really saw what we'd kind of been protecting him from for the longest time.
Yeah.
It was
from the LDS Church initially, but now in like, you know, now it was like political. I'm from the state that we had chosen to move to, and
the representative that wrote it was LDS. So I don't know if his Mormon background lent itself to writing that bill.
Yeah,
I don't know. And I'm.
But was he also the same one who changed his mind? He actually, because I know there was one LDS sponsor of the bill who did change his mind after actually having conversations.
Yeah,
and
there's several of them changed their minds. I don't know who was LDS.
Yeah. Two were LDS and one was not.
I mean, I kind of want to.
Yeah.
at least point out that there was...
The person that wrote it, the person that wrote the bill never changed his mind, and he still, I think he still stands behind it.
Okay.
But the three that wished they had voted differently, they couldn't change their vote, but they did come out saying, I wish I'd voted differently.
Yeah, okay.
So we did, we marched.
Which is great. I mean, that's hope for... That's all we can ask for.
And we were interviewed on NBC, Al Jazeera America, and
Al Jazeera.
Yeah, Al Jazeera.
Who else do I know who was interviewed by Al Jazeera?
I know. So yeah, we're very open. We're very vocal. We feel like we aren't doing that to hurt the church or hurt anybody. We just want to help.
No, I saw your interview, and you really only talked about your desire to protect your gay son. Mm-hmm. And
any other gay person.
Yeah.
I mean, not that, like, gay people need my protection, and that's, I don't feel...
Well, gay people need parents who are fighting for their protection, so they do need your protection.
But I know one boy that's 14 years old that I would do anything for. There isn't anything that we wouldn't do for our son.
Yeah. Well, let's move on a little bit. Jake, I know that we've all been a little bit jolted by... the excommunications have been going on, and I, you know, I'm just going to point out that that's pretty unnerving for the LDS people who are trying to advocate for gay people and other Mormon parents who are still members, because when they see someone get excommunicated for expressing their ideas or hearing that they're losing their recommends, that makes it even harder for them to come on board when they're needed. We need the parents to be advocating for their kids. We need the allies. And all of a sudden there's something arisen that makes that scary, which is that someone who is doing that, we don't know all of why they're getting excommunicated, but it sure seems to have a lot to do with their advocating for changes. We know Kate Kelly, obviously that wasn't specifically about gays, but people are wondering if John DeLynn's, you know, the he hasn't been excommunicated, but there's some concern that he might. And so, you know, I just want you to talk about what your response to that was, and which we, you know, I know about, but I want you to explain it. And since it's controversial, I want to get a chance for you to kind of point out your rationale and your belief behind that.
Okay. Well, I should say from the very, very beginning, I mean, as soon as when we wrote... we wrote kind of a coming out letter for John, where we came out everywhere, like on Facebook, and we did it all at once. But he didn't want to have to come out to this group of friends and then this set of family members and these people, like, over and over the next 6 months. And we kind of debated, how do we do this? And so we did it on Facebook. Mm-hmm. One time, everybody knew. Since that day, especially early on, Meg was like this too. Meg suddenly was put in this world of this mom that... all these gay kids and gay adults could suddenly reach out to and connect with. And I think she represented a mom to all these people that didn't feel like their mom was supportive, you know? And so Meg was always like messaging people. And I was, at the beginning, I was kind of apprehensive to jump in and get involved. And it took me a little bit longer because I just wasn't sure what I wanted to do or how I wanted to get involved. I wanted to help. But, and so more in the last 4 to 5 months for me, I've had so many people just because I should go back and say I blog pretty much continuously, and every time I, you know, write something, I get a lot of feedback, good and bad, you know, and a lot of it is through private messages through Facebook or whatnot. And over the last couple of months, I've really started to hear people's, like, stories and their pain, you know, and their like we were talking about earlier of, you know, these self-loathing, shaming, suicidal thoughts and drug use and all kinds of stuff. That is one thing they've all had in common. It's all been generated from how they felt that they've been treated either by their church, you know, or their family or their friends, but all behind the, kind of behind the church. I mean, the church is like the belief system behind the church and what the church as a culture is kind of seems to be pushing. It all stems from that. And so it's just to continue to watch this and see these people suffer for something that I no longer believe and which makes me feel like is no longer necessary.
Right.
You know, I just want to say, well, just don't believe it. You know, you can move on and be accepted. But I also know that the church is good for a lot of people, and I wouldn't, like, push somebody away from it. you know, if it's good for you. But if it's not good for you, I like, you know, I'm like, you can move on, you know, without it, and you can be happy. And so I'm very careful. That's a very careful.
Well, sometimes balance. I wish the church would just say that to the gay people. Say, you know, you're not welcome here, but go have a nice life somewhere else.
Yeah.
You know.
Sure.
But at least just if you're going to kick us out nicely and with the hope for the future. But
leave your guilt and shame and go. Right.
Go and have a nice life and find a good moral system for yourself.
And it is. It's super complicated because it's inconsistent with the doctrines and the messages that they're trying to teach. They're trying to be all encompassing and welcoming, but just it's oil and water.
It just
doesn't work.
Yeah.
And so I've seen this a lot, and especially John DeLynn for the last 6-7 months to me has represented. I didn't know a lot about him. I've obviously does the Mormon Stories podcast and stuff, and he's always represented one of the maybe most well-known LDS LGBT activists. I mean, that's who he's been for me. I've gone on and I see his status and see like the TEDx talk that he did and everything. I thought was phenomenal, and I've shared that a million times and love it, but for me, that's what he represents. And so when I learned about the, I guess, the threat of his excommunication, that hit home to me, because my thought on that was, if you're going to excommunicate our most outspoken, strongest, most influential LGBT activist within the church, the ripple effect that's going to trickle down from all these people that I've been like messaging, you know, I mean, it's like putting a muzzle on talking about, you know, all things gay. And all things like, you know, positive LGBT and how to build a support, you know, within the church. It's like muzzling it. It makes people want to go back into their shell, back into the closet. I'm looking at 14, 15 year olds that may see that or read about this and be like, it's not safe to come out. It's not safe to be gay and to be Mormon, you know. And I've like I said, everything stems from one-on-one conversations that I've had with, I mean, hundreds of people, you know, and just read through everybody else's pain and what they're going through, and it all stems from the church. And now where I'm at now, being comfortable in my belief system, where I'm at with the church, which is out of the church.
Yeah.
I see the church as the problem. I see the church as really wonderful for a lot of people. And I have family members that are in the church, and I would never want them to leave or ask them to leave or try to convince them to leave. Because I see that it's good for them, but for the people that it's not good for, there's a lot. It's such a frustrating thing because I'm seeing the results of this pain that they're causing. And so, a friend of mine in Arizona and I, Mike Nicolaisen, he started with these pending excommunications of Kate Kelly and John DeLynn. He kind of organized a mass resignation from the church, and to kind of put it on Facebook, and had a lot of interest, like kind of right away. He was trying to say, hey, this isn't right, you know. And I was kind of watching him, you know, and watching him create it.
And I think we should just clarify that I don't know exactly what Micah's philosophy is, but I think a lot of people are resigning because this is saying, well, if there's not room for Kate and John in the church, there's really not room for me. I'm trying to stay,
mm-hmm.
but this is just showing me that there's not, mm-hmm. and this is what I can do. But
mm-hmm.
maybe they want to do it in a way that will at least bring some attention, because I don't think anyone would want to bring attention to their leaving the church,
mm-hmm.
unless they were hoping the church would change for
without
the better.
A purpose. Yeah,
I mean, it's not like you're motivated to stick it to the church. I mean,
no,
and so
no. Well, I can speak to Mike. I mean, I obviously can't speak for Mike entirely, but I know some that he definitely. I mean, he's like a lot of us who have left the church or non-believing feel somewhat, and we feel. I mean, it's hurtful. You know, it's we feel a little bit betrayed, you know, because we feel like we were given this kind of fairy tale vision of what the church was, and kind of realized, okay, it's not exactly that. And we feel a little betrayed. And some people are very angry, and there's all different kinds of stages. And I think Michael went through a part where he was angry at the church, and then seeing other people kind of get kicked out of this church, especially when someone like Kate, who is a total believer and she wants to stay,
right.
You know, it's frustrating. It's like, I'm okay. I feel betrayed and that stinks for me, but I can kind of walk away. But for a believer, and they're getting, I mean, I just can't imagine.
And these gay people who get excommunicated,
yes.
They want to stay desperately.
Yes. And Mike is not getting
pushed out.
Mike is pro-LGBT, but he's not an LGBT activist.
Yeah.
And so when he started this resignation, this was kind of his motivation, was just to bring awareness to the situation of what was going on with the excommunications and how they felt like they were just like muzzles on people who may not fit into the cookie cutter mold. And so I looked at this and I was reading it, and my thought was, what does that do? I mean, if you get 500, 1,000, even if you got 100,000 people to quietly resign from the church, even loudly resign, you can't really loudly resign. You can just, because all you do is quietly resign. I mean, that's kind of the definition of it.
Yeah.
And to me, I'm like, well, that the church just got rid of a couple thousand people that were probably the troublemakers anyway. So I felt that the a mass resignation wasn't going to be a powerful enough message. I was reading, he was organizing on Facebook, and I was reading over it, and I had the thought, what if we did, what? How can we make a bigger message? And I thought, well, in the church, when you sin or you do something wrong, I mean, part of the repentance process is we're supposed to come forward and confess, you know, for certain levels of sin.
Yeah.
Obviously, if they're going to excommunicate Kate Kelly for something that we're all doing, you know, then obviously that is a confessable, a sin that needs to be confessed. And so I was kind of playing with this idea in my head, saying, well, I should have a church, a disciplinary council as well.
Yeah.
So should Micah. So should 8,000 other people, you know, 800,000 other people, you know, who are all, we all think the same thing. We're all doing the same thing. And it seems so inconsistent, you know, thinking back to a gay person in one city getting excommunicated for just being gay, you know, and just having the thoughts, or being SSA, as they say. And then another gay couple who's welcome into their ward and they're not excommunicated.
Yeah.
You know, and it just seems so inconsistent. And I feel like, how can we help make a difference and make a change to help bring consistency to acceptance, you know, if you will. And so I kind of had the idea is, what if we all request a disciplinary council? Because in a disciplinary council, I'll have an audience of 15 people, the state president and the high councilman, and I look at it as I have a voice with 15 people, where I can obviously express some of my concerns. And for me specifically, where this is where Mike and I differ on this idea is, for me, it's about helping the culture of the church to stop contributing to these suicidal thoughts that these kids are having and adults are having and everything. And if I can sit in front of a council and I can tell one story about one person, and that one person of the 15 people can kind of see it, and they go back to their ward, and there's a kid in their ward or an adult in their ward, mm-hmm. and that makes a difference, and that person can be there for that individual, and to help them just be just a little bit less suicidal. And if it saves one life in my stake, you know, multiply that by however many other people do the same kind of thing, the amount of impact that I feel like we can make. And so this is what I'm thinking in my head. And I reached out to Micah and I kind of pitched him on the idea. And in less than 24 hours, we were full throttle with this. Mm-hmm. And we realized that at face value, this is going to be taken as these apostates kind of going up there causing problems. They just hate the church. They're trying to be problematic.
Yeah, I think some people look at it as being a very anti-Mormon sort of action.
And I can see how it would look that way, but it kind of depends. And I think there are probably people that may be involved in it that may treat it that way.
Yeah.
They may just want to kind of cause problems. You know, but that's not why it exists. And Micah wants, like I do, kind of wants to hold the church accountable for some of the stuff that they're doing. And this is a way to do it. And it's certainly not for everybody. It's a disciplinary council is a very personal thing and a personal choice to actually want to even go through.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and it's, I can imagine as a non-believing Mormon, that's not that big of a deal to me. You know, I'm definitely looking there more to kind of help educate, if I'm honest, and help try to make a change within the culture the best I can. But for a believing Mormon, that's going to do it. And I know many who are, my hat's off to them because they're putting everything on the line.
So are there some believing Mormons who are
definitely
who are joining that action?
Definitely. Okay. Those are the ones I don't know if I say I have a lot of respect for, but I'm blown away by.
I have respect for them.
Yeah.
They're putting things on the line
What they believe in. Mm-hmm. And even I know the ordained women movement, I know they looked at it a little bit as not a really good reaction. I don't think Kate wanted anything to do with it, you know, and that's why I make it very clear that Kate has nothing to do with it, neither does John.
Yeah.
You know, but their activism and their being public figures is what has really prompted Mike and I to kind of act forward and do this.
Well, I'm assuming, I mean, I obviously anyone who participates, there might have different reasons for doing so, but when I look at it from the perspective I might have, I think the excommunication procedure is problematic, and just the fact that they excommunicate people now in this day and age, it's really I've never heard of anyone. I mean, there's out there people saying, yes, it was a loving thing, it brought me back to God, but no, most people who get excommunicated never come back to the church. Mm-hmm. It actually ends up being the last straw, and it ends up feeling very abusive and very traumatic. Mm-hmm. And when it's a gay person being excommunicated, there's really not a way back for them. Mm-hmm. And so from my viewpoint, I would like to see them stop excommunicating altogether. And I think the church could stop excommunications. And mm-hmm. I think they could find another way of helping people repent, or a different process at least. Right. If someone wants to go through a process where they have a chance to be rebaptized, I think they can find a way for people to sign on if that's what they want, but not force it on people.
I agree.
Not force people out. So to me, it'd be a win if people aren't excommunicated. If none of the people who signed up for the Strangers in Zion cause, if none of them get excommunicated, hooray, you know, we have all these bishops who are seeing that these are people they want in their church, they want in their communities, they want people to be conversing in. That would be, you know, I wish they wouldn't have excommunicated Kate, obviously. I hope they don't excommunicate John. Mm-hmm. But to me, it'd be the biggest win would be if none of you guys get excommunicated.
Right.
Well, on the other hand.
Well, I know that's one of Micah's with you on that. I think he's very against the excommunication idea.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of it, but even that has little to do with my motivation.
That's not your motivation.
That's not my thing. Recently did a interview for the Washington Post where they're asking me about that, and they're asking about John DeLynn, and they asked me if I thought he should be excommunicated, and I'm not an attorney, but if I were to look at a legal document, it seems like okay, this yeah, but I completely disagree with the concept behind the excommunication.
Yeah.
I mean, John DeLynn has helped so many people in their faith crisis transitions. He's helped people stay in the church, help people kind of comfortably get out of the church, you know, and so much in the LGBT community. I would hate to see him be excommunicated over something where he's being a support to so many people.
Right.
I don't think he should be.
Way you were quoted made it sound like you supported him.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I was referencing the way that the church is handling things versus how John...
Or how, according to their rules.
Correct, mm-hmm. correct.
Their current rules.
And that speaks to what you were just saying, is I would like to see those changed, even though that's not my major platform here. But so I have a...
But let's just talk about your platform. Is really you're feeling fed up with the mistreatment of gay people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I wrote in our blog a couple of weeks ago kind of an explanation of what we're talking about right now of why I was part of starting this movement. And and at the end of it, over the next the next 24 hours, the people that kind of reached out to me privately and just it was like I was suddenly like a on the other end of a suicide hotline. And it was I'm not equipped, I'm not trained, you know, and I'm getting people just pouring their souls out to me because I think they suddenly realize that I'm a safe person, you know, because I'm obviously anti-gay suicide, which seems like everybody should be. but obviously, I mean, people aren't safe. They don't feel comfortable talking with everyone.
But they saw that you're willing to go on the line and suffer some of the consequences. Obviously not in a full way, and you're not trying to keep your membership regardless, but your statement is that you're willing to stand there and suffer the process that your gay brothers and sisters suffer when they're disciplined by the church. And
what one person told me is they wrote me a book. I got their whole life pretty much, and they said that it was amazing to them that there was somebody out there who had never met them, you know, that was willing to basically put everything on the line for them and their life, you know. And it's just, and I'm reading stuff like that, and it's, I mean, that's not a demotivator. That's a motivator, you know. Yeah. I'm like, if we can try to make a little bit of change somehow within the church, within the culture, I mean, you literally can save lives. In the very next message I got was from somebody else who said I wrote my blog on a Thursday, and they said, they said, there's somebody in our ward that I wish I could have shown your blog or your post to their parents last week, because their son just killed themselves on Monday, you know. And I don't know if this would have made a difference or not, you know, but it all matters. And I'm reading this, and then I go on to our Strangers in Zion page, and people are like ripping me personally down for wanting to attack the church, you know. And I'm like, you don't get it, and that's fine that you don't get it. I mean, you don't have to get it, you know, but I'm going to do what I can do to help stop this. And it's,
And it's not, Jake's not recommending everybody do this. Like for me personally, a disciplinary council would feel abusive. I have no interest in going through a disciplinary council. And I support Jake in his efforts, of course, and he supports me. And I feel like I should kind of do that just to go through. And plus, maybe it would give me even more empathy to the plight of our LGBT brothers and sisters, and to say, like, I've been excommunicated too. It feels awful. It's not a good feeling. But I don't know. I don't know. I just can't. I couldn't. I don't think that they would wish that I had a disciplinary council.
Yeah.
To feel what they feel. And no one deserves to be abused or to feel abused.
No, and the hope is my hope is I go on to it. Well, one, I really hope to have one.
Yeah.
And my hope is that you go in there and I can have a conversation with 15 men in our stake that I've never met because we haven't gone to church.
Yeah.
And realize, wow, this stake's amazing.
Yeah.
This is awesome. And then possibly get involved at some level in helping, you know, the gay community within that stake feel accepted. I mean, that is the ultimate outcome that you want, you know.
And I think both you and I know a lot of gay people who want to be in the church. And neither you nor I want to take the church away from them. Mm-hmm. What you and I both want is the church to be a place where safe. They can be safe and grow and find love and have a nice life. And so, to me, I understand that people are going to be frightened by this kind of action, but I don't hear you saying that you want to destroy the church. I hear you saying you want the church to do something that will make it a better church. And certainly for some people you love dearly, which is these Mormon gays that you know personally who want to be part of this church.
Right, exactly.
You're not telling them to run away from, we kind of are saying you got to...
I mean, if I can be blunt, I'm not out here to destroy the church. I'm out here to stop the church from destroying gay people.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it, or the lives of them. I'm sorry, that's what it feels like.
And that's your observation on a lot of conversations you've had.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And so Yeah,
I mean, we know stories.
Even if it destroyed one person's life, well, every soul is important. Yeah. You know, it's
well,
not,
it doesn't have to be.
It happens
destroying
to
lives.
Be hundreds, yeah. You know. But yeah. Even if it were one, it should be enough to at least stop and think about this and think.
And suicide is the dramatic end, you know. Yeah. But I mean, like you were saying earlier, I mean, being thrown out of your house—that needs to stop. You know, having these. So many of these kids, you know, and again, I say kids, but I mean adults, you know, turn to drugs and turn to all kinds of things
well,
to cope.
And let's remind people why they turn to drugs. They turn to drugs because they've been rejected and thrown out of the church. Mm-hmm. They're left without a moral foundation mm-hmm. based on their reality.
Mm-hmm.
And they're left floundering and they're left with no self-esteem. And they mm-hmm. turn to dangerous behaviors because mm-hmm. they don't have a self-esteem. They don't have a spiritual home.
Mm-hmm.
And so the drug abuse, it's hard for some people to see, well, why does the church cause drug abuse? Well, it causes drug abuse by kicking them out
mm-hmm.
and leaving them floundering. And,
mm-hmm.
and even
so,
if the church doesn't, you know, if the parents do, it's the
yeah.
whole culture that contributes to it.
One thing I wanted to, you know, just discuss a little, though, is that I think that, you know, I'm thinking about the parents. I'm nervous about the parents who might see John Dillon get excommunicated and think, well, that's only because he supported gays. And I think it's a more complicated story than that. I think that
it is
that John is they're not if some people aren't happy, they also has talked about other issues on his podcast, not just the gay issue.
Mm-hmm.
So it's impossible to say if John is getting excommunicated for supporting gay issues.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I'm nervous that a lot of parents might be seeing that that's why he's getting
mm-hmm.
excommunicated. So I'm worried about my parents who are hearing of people losing their recommends because they're supporting their gay child. I'm worried about the parents who are nervous about being there, you know, because the life of their child might depend on them
mm-hmm.
being supportive.
Yeah.
And if they're feeling like by being supportive, they're putting their membership at risk or their
mm-hmm.
temple recommends at risk. So I'm already nervous about that. And so I guess
mm-hmm.
if I have a concern or if I've heard some other parents' concerns about this, it's that they see this as one more polarizing thing, that with the church, they don't react well to protests and criticism, as Kate Kelly shows. You know, they work best with behind the scenes working, and, you know, the idea is to work in a way that's more polite. And you know, as their publicist said, the church PR person said, she's got excommunicated because of her tone. Now, I don't know
mm-hmm.
if
yeah,
that's
yeah.
true. I mean, obviously,
I
she's
listened
not going
to that podcast.
But she did say that. And
mm-hmm.
so people are hearing, are we doing with this right tone? So I guess I could see why parents might be nervous about something polarizing. But you're also telling me that you've got believing members who are putting themselves to this process. So this is not people trying to tear down the church.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But this is people who are definitely putting something online to bring attention to the church leaders, because
mm-hmm.
this is a message to them, right? I mean, I'm not sure who else you would be talking to by doing this, but
mm-hmm.
Do you have some sort of response to that, as to the, you know, the nervous parent who believes in the church, it's important to them, they
mm-hmm.
don't want to get excommunicated, they do want to support their gay child.
You know, like how to support your gay. I think that's kind of what we're talking about. I mean, that's the purpose of. I mean, that's the big thing. Is like, no, I don't think people don't know how to, people don't know how to love, or maybe how to show love. I mean,
or maybe they know, but the way they think. Maybe they think the church is telling them they can't love as they naturally want to, or as
mm-hmm.
a parent would, what seems right to them.
Right. Well, I think people have a very hard time with, you know, with the term, you know, hate the sin, love the sinner.
Yeah.
That term is so, it's confusing, you know, because I think people are, they think that, I think the way that people hate the sin is kind of accidentally not loving
yeah.
loving the sinner. What happens so many times is that, that the parent becomes more pushy or more throwing the church more down like the throat of the gay kid.
Yeah.
You know, read your scriptures more, do this more. You know, all that kid wants is for their mom just to come and say, just put their arms around them and say, I love you. Yeah. That's all they want. And I think parents are worried that if their kid is like, I'm gay, and the mom comes and puts her arms around and says, I love you, the mom is worried that the kid is going to think that they're okay with them being gay.
Yeah.
That's not fair to say, but that the mom would would endorse their, if they decide to live a quote gay lifestyle, that the parent would be okay with that, you know. But by saying I love you, they're just saying I love you, and that's all these kids want to hear. And I say kids all the time, and because there's a lot of people who are a lot older than me that I talk to all the time who talk about their relationship with their father and how they didn't have that, and they wish that, you know, they had a more relationship that like John and I have, you know. And it's weird because these are older men to me, you know, but they never had that. And so it's a weird dynamic to talk to so many different people who just have never really felt loved like from their parents.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, I just want to point out Caitlin Ryan, who heads up the Family Acceptance Project, and she helped co-write the, she's just, does the Family Acceptance Project. What she noticed from parents of Mormon families is that they feel like they are loving their kid, and it hurts them to that their child hurts, but this is how they show love. They are loving them by helping them overcome this what they feel like may be an overcomable issue.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting thing. I don't think that these parents don't love their kids.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, but they feel like the way they're showing their love isn't healthy for the child.
Yeah. I mean, you frame the perspective this way. They're told by the church that now if their child acts on their homosexual feelings, they're lost to God, right? Mm-hmm. They're lost to the family. Mm-hmm. So therefore, if we love them, we need to keep them from acting on their homosexual feelings.
Right.
Okay, so yeah, it's natural to arrive at, oh, we need to do whatever we can to prevent that. Mm-hmm. And so if... you should never compare homosexuality to using drugs, but since it happens all the time, I'm just going to do that.
Don't.
If you're using heroin, how do you best help a heroin user? Well, it's hard to say. You don't give them heroin, right? Mm-hmm. If you come to a point where you realize that nothing you do is going to impact whether they use heroin or not, do you just love them? Do you kick them out? I mean, sometimes if you're giving them money and they're buying heroin with it, yeah, you don't. But should you stop talking to them or withdraw all love from them?
Of course not.
Now, the difference with gay people is that these measures don't take away their homosexuality. In fact, most gay people, regardless, they end up choosing same-sex relationships. Mm-hmm. And there's virtually no parent's action that has kept someone from acting on their homosexuality. And so the only impact of throwing them out and doing this tough love is that it leads them to suicide and leads them to be separate from the family and makes it harder for them to ever reconcile with the church if that's what they want to do.
Yeah.
And so it's really, people have to realize that the tough love doesn't work there. It's mm-hmm. never going to work. It never has worked. Mm-hmm. That you just have to let go of the judgment, let the gay person make their decision, mm-hmm. and love them. And so that's sort of my soapbox about that. But that's how it is different from drug and alcohol abuse or some other thing that in the eyes of you or your religion equals a big sin. Now, I hope that the church will kind of someday take a look at what same-sex marriages and what is might rethink what's really so immoral about two guys or two mm-hmm. women, you know, committing to each other, mm-hmm. you know, whether that is really so terrible, you know, as there seem to be, they don't say that right out, but they seem to imply that once in a while, that, and that's what most Mormons believe. So hopefully that's going to evolve. But even if that doesn't evolve, you know, what about just not judging and loving, because the fruits of that is that you don't have a dead son on your doorstep, you're not attending his funeral, you don't have him on the street, you don't have him using drugs, you don't have him infecting himself with HIV because mm-hmm. of his very low self-esteem, you don't have him hating God and hating the church, mm-hmm. you have him anyway.
if you could have some guidelines and just somebody to help you through life, no matter what your life choices are, no matter what you do in life, you know, everybody can benefit from love, guidance, nurturing, safety, stability, all of these things. It's not, so it's interesting to me that you throw a kid out and then you're shocked that he manages to stumble into drugs and promiscuity and sexually transmitted diseases or, you know, whatever. It's incredible. There's still developing youth that need our guidance and our love and our acceptance. And I just feel like we should put humans first. I just really stand by that.
What do you feel like the church, Dick, what do you feel like the church should change without changing their doctrine? I mean, assuming that they're not going to change doctrine, what can they change?
The biggest thing for me is I think you could include very gay-specific topics to either address in general conference, in manuals, to target gay people in a way to that would have them feel loved and feel accepted. You know, because right now all the rhetoric is negative. It's all don't. There are no do's. Mm-hmm. And I think there need to be, what do you do? How do you treat this gay individual that's coming to church? How do you show them that you love them? How do you do this?
Also, like, maybe level the playing field. So we allow holding hands and dating and, you know, I mean, you're pretty, there's a lot of boundaries in when you're a teenager and you're dating. But maybe have the same standards for a gay person as there is for a straight person, celibacy before marriage, and, you know, no heavy petting or whatever, all of the guidelines that the straight people, so that these kids aren't other, something wrong or completely unnatural and against God. So it's just, let's level the playing field. And I mean, I don't know
if that's the problem. Yeah. And then, but then what do you do without
changing? That's complicated without the doctrine.
It is, so it is complicated.
I wish that there could be discussion about that.
Because then you go, but stop.
That's one
right
step. That's one step ahead.
Right, sorry, I'm 20 steps
that
ahead.
Doctrinal change. Well, I mean, it doesn't. They don't need a doctrinal change to say, to tell the gay people, okay, you know, we aren't going to bless your marriage as a temple marriage, but we'd rather see you being monogamous. Mm-hmm. I don't think it requires doctrinal change to teach our gay youth that monogamy might be a better path to God for them within Mormonism than promiscuity. Mm-hmm. That they should take advantage of whatever is available to them. If that's gay marriage, if that's going to promote their monogamy, they should just take whatever the law allows them to live the most non-promiscuous life possible. It doesn't seem like that should require gay change. They don't, even if they don't put it on equal footing with heterosexual marriage, which, you know, I'm not saying I agree with that, but I'm saying it would certainly be easier for you to raise your children if you could say to them, okay, I want you to be monogamous until then once you're of the right age, I want you to, you know, if you're more a parent, saying, I want you to be true to one person, and even though we, you know, you'll never get married in the temple, at least we'll know you're living a safe and healthy lifestyle.
I mean, you asked this question, and there's somebody that I know very, very well. I don't know if they want me to say who they are or not. So that's a very believing Mormon. And I asked this person that same question. I said, what's your solution? I said, if you were the 12 or you're the prophet, and I said, well, if you were God, you know, if you were our Heavenly Father, what would you do? You know, if you could rewrite anything, you know, how would you fix the gay problem, you know, the gay issue as far as how it fits into the eternal plan, you know, within Mormon doctrine? And he goes, oh, it's simple. He was like, it's really simple. I was like, oh, and I'm like waiting for this. I'm like, oh, I'm excited for this answer. And he goes, you don't make gay people. And the point was, he wasn't being anti-gay. He was just saying, it's a problem. It doesn't fit. And he's like, you can't, you have to change doctrine. You have to change what's already there for it to fit, because right now it doesn't make sense. And it's a problem. And I think it's a problem that the church is facing right now.
Yeah.
You know, but it was shocking to kind of hear him say that, but that was his solution. I was like, okay, I guess that would be a solution, you know, but he wasn't.
Obviously he's not God, so right, how did he just put it in the church?
And of course he wasn't saying he didn't want gay people not to exist. He was just saying this is a major problem, you know, and since we have gay people, then you have to change the doctrine as being like the only really way to make it work.
Let's not say change the doctrine, but let's put it in the terms of Mormons, which is it sort of evolved the doctrine by revelation. And I hope we don't have more gay people doing the ordained women thing, asking them to pray about it, but I sure hope they're praying about it. But I do want to, you know, focus a little bit on the here and now of the things that people can do. And within this doctrinal structure, and you've talked about that, that they can show love, the wards can show love, that they can allow participation of their gay people who want to. I mean, the gay people who are going are willing to be there without equality. There are gay people attending and they are totally accepting that they aren't going to have temple marriage for their gay marriages. And they're just asking for the crumbs, you know, but they're not even being given the crumbs.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
I don't know. It comes back to me with our gay youth, especially with what my state president said about church dances at the very beginning of what we're teaching our gay kids, whether they're out or not, because they're there, and what we're teaching them by having these policies in place. The shaming starts young, and I think there's got to be a way to safely navigate that. I would love if my state president had called me up proactively and said, "Hey, your son's going to be 14 in 2 months. I understand he's gay. What do you want from me to help me? These are our policies at the dances. What can I do to help that be better?"
Yeah.
You know, if he'd made that proactive call, I don't know what I could have said, you know, because I know he's not going to let him dance with other boys, you know. But if he'd given me the opportunity to have that conversation, that just would have been such a much more comfortable, just a comfortable environment. And I wouldn't have felt as nervous or scared to have John at church, knowing there's a state presence that's like, "I don't know what to do, but what you tell me what to do," you know?
Yeah.
And then he obviously still has choice, but
get input from you.
Yeah.
Or at least be empathetic to what your son's going through and what you're going
instead
through.
Of just saying, "Oh, yeah, we're no temple recommended, we're going to..." Yeah. Keep shunning all 28 of you. It's just...
Well, he doesn't have to worry about the problem of what to do with John or you anymore, does he? That solved his problem. That was...
I know you make it light. We know several gay teens back there who are in that state.
It's
still a problem. They're just not...
It's still there, and it's... and so what can we do? And I have a close friend who... somebody that I didn't know... Well, I knew his family, but he's... He's sending a letter to request a disciplinary council in that stake. And so I'm really curious to see kind of what happens there, you know?
Yeah.
And he's a very pro-LGBT individual. So that's exciting to me a little bit to know, because I'm going to know a lot of these 15 people.
He's putting himself on the line. Yeah.
And he's a fringy kind of semi-believer. He still believes a little.
Yeah.
But he's going to be in front of, hopefully he'll be in front of 15 people and I'll probably know 10 of them.
Yeah.
You know, and they'll know us, you know, and they'll know John. And so hopefully that one little thing to speak to strangers in Zion, that one little thing could make a difference back in that stake and could help the three individuals that we know who are youth right now, who are gay in that stake and who aren't out.
Yeah.
You know, it can help make their lives easier. So it's encouraging.
I'd also just... you know, talking about that, but we kind of got sidetracked a little bit. But I was wanting to just kind of give a little bit of encouragement to, if a parent's watching this and kind of doesn't know how to handle this, that I always say this, but I always feel bad for people that don't have gay kids. Just find the joy, just find the happiness. See that your child can be happy and find joy in that instead of being devastated about what the child that you thought you had or the expectations that you have. Love the child that you have unconditionally, and your life will change in amazing ways. Jake and I, our family is closer than ever. We're so fortunate to have John, obviously, and our relationship is stronger. it's interesting. Putting family first is what the church asks of you, and that's what we did. And yes, it did take us away from the church.
But we know,
ironically enough,
we also know plenty of parents of gay kids who are in the church, and they make that work. You know, and so just because you love your gay kid, that doesn't mean you're going to come in and be like us.
And I'm working, You know, I'm interacting with lots of parents who are in the church, and I've been really struck with how many parents are doing the right thing and how they feel troubled about it, but they're choosing the right thing for their kid. They're loving their kids unconditionally. They're choosing their health. They really want to see the church in the good light. They really want to stay active. They would never join Strangers in Zion.
Sure.
I don't want them to. I want them to stay in the church.
I don't
want them to have a faith crisis. Some of them are going to. I don't want them to. I wish that I didn't see that in their future. But a lot of them will come out. Some will come out on the side where you guys did. Others will come out on the side and stay. I really want to, you know, root for those who are able to stay. And I also, not because I'm criticizing you, but because I really just want the church to change, and some parents need to stay there in order to save the lives of some of the kids in their wards and stakes. And so I just hope that some of the people listening will be able to hear your story, but take from it, you know, that this isn't their inevitability.
Right, exactly.
And we certainly support those parents of gay kids or gay relatives who want to stay in the church. I mean,
yeah.
We don't have to be in it to obviously show support completely.
Right. If you're going to stay, if you're going to go, really what it all boils down to is just be there for your child and love them no matter what.
I can imagine what John would be like if we'd not been accepting of him right now. I don't want to think about that.
Nope.
He's such a happy kid, and he's got everything going for him.
So happy, well-adjusted. Spiraling wildly out of control.
Yeah, I don't want him sending messages like the ones that I get to somebody else.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's like a horrible thought.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
If he couldn't reach to me and he's messaging somebody else because they happen to love their kid, and he wants that relationship with that person.
Yeah.
That's just sad.
And me too. I just get messages all the time from tortured souls. I just don't. I didn't have that experience myself, but I just saw so many. I just see so many people where they just spend so much of their time tortured, because they can't come to a place of happiness, and they can't use their religion to move forward. They try and they can't.
Yeah, and I should say that, I mean, as many sad and frustrating messages and painful messages that I get, there are so many that are positive. I mean, so many. Your brother texted me yesterday.
My brother?
Sam.
Okay.
And, your brother texted me yesterday, and he had just a really positive message. It was something I needed to hear.
Okay.
You know, and he had no idea. And, you know, but those kinds of things, I mean, him messaging me in a positive light helps me continue to want to do, you know, what we're doing. And so, because if it was all negative, it would be really hard.
Hard
to go. I would want to disappear.
Well, I'm really glad we had a chance to bring this out. I like I say, I know that this action's controversial. I know that when you're involved in activism, that you're open to criticism from a lot of sides, and some people might totally disagree with you. For all I know, they might be right. For all I know, they might be wrong. I can't know which is the best way to impact change. You know, there's people who think we should do it all behind the scenes, do it nicely, and there's other people who think, no, we just have to be out there and be as loud and angry as we can. I just can't say which is right, so I just have to assume that we need all of the above. And I'm with you guys on one thing, is that I'm not inside the church, but I really love Mormons, and I really want the gay Mormons. I see these young kids who are 25 years old. They're coming home from their missions. They're 22, 23, 24. They are so Mormon. They're these happy young men, and they just get hit over the head with a hammer, and they just, all they want is just to have their happy Mormon life, and they can't, and they're not even given any chance of doing it. And they're starting to create a space. Affirmation is creating a great space for some of these guys, and they're able to sort of hang on to their Mormonism and hang on to their values and find an affirming place. But I just really, I want them to stay Mormon. I want them to be welcome there. I want the church to invite them. I want the church to be a wonderful, healthy place for them. And so I hope that, you know, for better or for worse, that what I do, what you do will help promote that for them, even if it's not for me, if it's not for your son now in Mormonism.
Yeah, we want what President Uchtdorf says. We want there to be a place for people. We want people to be able to come back.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what they want to do.
Yeah. So I don't want to. So if your action, isn't to tear down the church, it's to build up the gay people in the church or help the church. And you're seeing that the change, really, I'm fighting, the way I advocate is from the bottom. I'm just trying to work with members under the sort of circumstances we have. This kind of action is trying to communicate a message more to the top.
This is not something I would have, I mean, a month and a half ago, not something I'd ever thought I'd kind of be part of, you know, but it's just been this snowball of something's got to be done bigger than what's being done, in my opinion. And it's something that I feel like I can do because I feel like I have to do something.
Yeah. Well, let's watch how things unfold. I really appreciate you giving the time and to this interview and the other ones. And I hope that we can communicate something that makes sense to people, or at least gives them understanding of where you're at if they don't agree with you. Or
Thank you for giving us that opportunity.
Thank you.
Again.
Thanks for joining us today on Mormon Stories. If you enjoyed this episode, please help us make more like it by becoming a monthly subscriber at mormonstories.org. Music for this episode was provided by the Lower Lights.
When other sources cease to make